too bright in London doesn't happen often. Okay, let's continue. We're going to talk about IFRS 8 amendments.
That's correct.
Nadia.
Good afternoon, everyone. Paper 27 deals with amendments to IFRS 8 operating segments. Staff is currently in the process of drafting the exposure draft of those amendments. During the course of the drafting process, we identified two issues which we would like to discuss with the board today. The first issue relates to consistent identification of reportable segments by entities. The second issue relates to the number of reported line items for segment information. We are going to start with the first issue. When the board discussed this issue last time, it tentatively decided to include guidance in the amendments to emphasize that the appropriate application of IFRS 8 facilitates the consistent description of the entity across its various external communications. We now recommend that the board amend IFRS 8 not only to emphasize the importance of the consistent description of the entity, but also to require the entity to explain why the reportable segments in its financial statements differ from those included in the management commentary or other parts of its annual report in cases where such difference exists. In other words, we are proposing another disclosure requirement in IFRS 8. The question for this issue is on page 4 of the paper, and we would like to hear about your thoughts about this staff recommendation.
Mary.
I support the proposal, but I would like to encourage us to try to go further and say not just focus on the management commentary or other parts of the analyst of the annual report, but also say, or other communication with stakeholders such as analyst presentations, because I think that's part of what we've heard has been the issue. I think that some regulators have addressed this issue and have tried to formulate language that maybe we could borrow to kind of define a reasonable range of these other communications. I'm thinking, for example, of the US SEC's regulation, I think it's FD, that talks about providing the same level of information to all shareholders. And so it talks about not providing things privately in some communications or others. So I think there may be regulatory initiatives that we could leverage. And I think it's that disconnect between what the management approach of IFRS 8 and what management presents elsewhere that we're trying to capture. And it's not just management commentary, in part because there may be jurisdictions in which, you know, how management presents its management commentary might be influenced by things other than the management view. So yes, but I would like us to try and go slightly further.
Martin?
Yeah, I agree with Mary, because I don't think the problem is that we have difference between the financial statements and the management commentary. It is more that we have difference between then segment reporting and other communication material, press releases, analyst presentations, earnings releases, and therefore we should enlarge that, because that addresses the problem, and I don't think there is a problem between different kind of level of segments between management report and financial statements.
Weibo?
I personally would not agree with, you know, both Martin's and Mary's, particularly on the analyst release or other type of disclosure. And the staff proposals is basically within the same package of information, and if there is a difference, what should we do? I think outside of that, it would be hard to operate. Assume the CEO leads delegations to go out, you know, to sell the annual report of IPO purpose, and because of the request from the audience, and the CEO, the CFO provide more detailed information, and then whether it should be reflected some way in the annual report, if you have.
Gary?
I agree with Wago and not my other colleagues here. I think I agree that they, if it, when it's in the in report package, we talk management commentary, but the package, I think it should be consistent. And if it's not consistent, in other parts, the entity should be required to explain. And also, quite frankly, I think probably reconcile as well. You know, it, you know, maybe it, the explanation's obvious, maybe it's not. I think going beyond the boundaries of that is actually a bridge too far. First of all, a lot of these communications are not general purpose communications, they're special purpose. And the rating agency presentation is structured entirely different. It frequently, you know, than the general shareholder type reporting. So there's a lot of specialized type reporting that's out there. And if we said, I mean, executives in big companies give speeches all the time. Much of it deals with communicating business results or whatever, and it might be by a legal entity, might be a line of specific product line and so on. So I think if we say you got to look at all those things, that what you've done is create an audit task and an internal control task to understand every management communication that's got financial numerics in it. And I think that's going way too far. I also think as a practical matter is companies understand that they have to have consistent communications. And they don't necessarily have the time to have five versions of the same thing out there because analysts ask about that. You know, why does it say this here and say that over there? And they got to reconcile, explain that you're actually probably going into more detail than you really want to. So I acknowledge it certainly can't exist. I don't know if it's broad-based. You know, so far that we need to put in the standards. In any event, you end up with a chase looking for all the other communications that are out there you might not even know about.
Daryl?
And this sort of comes back to a little bit of what Gary said, but I just wanted to ask Mary and Martin if the information that you're talking about, I assume the information you're talking about is broadly publicly available. So it's not in one-on-one communications with rating agencies, it's information that is actually made available. Okay.
Yeah, usually, very often, it's these days, it's posted on companies' websites in shareholder communications section.
But you'll often get, you know, regional executives talk and say the regional chamber of commerce or something. They're talking about a country results or a region's results, which may have no relationship to a segment reporting. But if we, so is that evidence that the management segment reporting or operating segment is not correct? No, it's just another communication.
Well, I support what Marie and Martin said. It's my view that the real problem is inconsistency between the financial statement and some other presentations which are widely available and relate to the financial statement, such as analyst presentation or earnings releases. I also acknowledge the problem of the scope and limitation of that, and what Gary said is difficulty in doing that. We should not extend to any communication to anyone. So we have to find a wording which would circumscribe the scope of this requirement to information published in connection with the financial statement for the period and not to any discussions between the CFO and the rating agency or presentation to the Chamber of Commerce or to potential customers about the business which we are going to transact. So if we can find proper wording, I would support doing what Marie and Martin propose.
Chuck?
Thank you. I agree with the staff recommendation. However, because it's going to be a requirement, like Philip pointed out, the scope is really important. And without having a clear scope, it is difficult to require to what extent they have to comply with. It's not clear. So therefore, just my question would be very naive, but do we define what's the management commentary or annual report in our anywhere in our standard or anywhere in our publication? We have a practice statement of management commentary. Do we define or something?
Yes, management of commentary does define those, but it's not an authoritative piece of IFRS guidance. And the paper did address this topic in terms of these terms are not defined in the authoritative IFRS guidance. But we consider the term, for example, in your report, we believe that it's well understood to be operational and workable in practice. So most people would know what we mean by annual report,
okay,
especially listed companies. So
then the, as long as it is within the management commentary and the other part of annual report, then the scope is clear.
As drafted on the paper, yes, but now we're talking about
yes,
scope.
That's why
that we would need to consider
separately.
In that case,
I agree with what Weigel said. We should limit it because we are requiring it.
Martin?
A question, because my recollection was that the problem in the post-implementation review, which was addressed by users, was exactly not between management commentary and financials, it was between these other statements. And now to address a problem with a solution which not solves the problem is not a solution for me. And therefore, I think if we...
Very logical.
But
it's German logic.
Therefore, I think if we, and maybe you can confirm that, that was a problem addressed. If not, I think we should not do anything. If we then not able to enlarge that to other documents like the earnings release.
The PIR identified concerns about inconsistencies between three things: the financial statements, the rest of the annual report, and investor briefings, etc. So investor briefings was part of the issue that was brought to us.
But not the only thing?
No, it's also other parts of the annual report.
There's investor briefings that follow an earnings release, which is very quickly tied to regulatory filing. Then there's an annual shareholder, investor meeting, which they're talking more strategy and forward looking. So when you say analyst briefings, are you talking all the above or a subset? There's a lot of them.
Yeah, I don't know that we got specifics like that, or at least not consistency.
I suppose we could scope that by making clear that that they are published in conjunction with
the quarterly, annual, semi-annual reporting. Yeah, that's fine.
Yeah. Which is what Steve suggested. Stephen?
I agree with Martin. I mean, this disclosure is pretty innocuous, really. We're not asking anybody to change the definition of the segments or anything like that. It is merely explaining why you've chosen those segments given your other communications with investors. And it's trying to be a reminder that it would be rather helpful if it was a bit more consistent. I mean, we're not asking it for it to be consistent, merely a disclosure as to why you've done it. So I don't see any reason why we have to limit it to management commentary. Can't we merely say, explain why the reported segments in financial statements differ from other communication with investors?
Yeah, we'll need to
that's
think
what
of
we're
I'm,
asking
I'm
for, isn't
writing
it?
Down ideas, but need to explore.
Which takes place in conjunction with.
Well, why limit it? I mean.
Well, because then you might get into the situation that Gary described.
Yeah,
it seems
a
reasonable way of scope.
And also there is an audit problem. I mean, the auditors will have to enforce it, and the auditors cannot be expected to go and look out for any information provided by the entity. So I think if we want to make it workable, it has to be something that the auditors will be able to enforce and to verify, i.e. it must be a relatively circumscribed set of data. You can't expect auditors to be looking at newspapers every day and finding and reading articles where the management is commenting.
Ah,
well, I've become reasonable over time. 10 years ago, I wouldn't have said that.
Amaru?
Thanks, Hans. It's more a question for staff and for us, maybe too. Are we expanding our mandate in terms of reaching out other pieces of communication that are not general purpose financial reporting? This is the first question. And are we bringing to the ISB what could be seen as a primary responsibility of regulators in terms of communication between companies and investors?
Well, consistency between the financial statements, the rest of the annual report and other communications was part of the basis on which the board developed IFRS 8 in the first place. So I think what we're proposing here is entirely consistent with that original objective of the board. And what we're trying to do here is to identify a way of bringing the results of that or achieving that objective more effectively.
So you do believe we are not expanding?
No, because we're not telling people what to include in those other areas.
But we are saying that any communication that is with investors should observe what is mandated by IFRS.
No. Just to explain the differences, to the extent that there are differences in the segments identified, that should be explained in the financial statements.
Do we believe that it would be justifiable, to ask for this explanation within this whole management approach that the entities take to describe their activities? They do look, they need to describe their activities through the eyes of management, and therefore I think it's reasonable to explain why management looks at them in different ways and different forms of communication.
Gary?
And, I think keep in mind, the CODMs see an awful lot of information about the company and not necessarily in the operating segment sense. Again, thinking for an industrial or commercial company, it could be by geography, be a natural expense, it could be like line of business, which is sort of the operating segment view. It could be by manufacturing versus development versus marketing. I mean, they look at the companies many, many ways and for different purposes. And, analyzing or getting ready for a press release is different than the budgeting purpose and so on. So if you're the CODM, say, I look at this thing in a matrix, multi-dimension cube, and however the requirements of the operating segments, there's kind of a revenue-type customer-focused reporting generally. So they talk about the company a lot of different ways. I think keep it inside the annual or the interim reporting package is sufficient to explain, perhaps reconcile, the differences if it's not evident. But I think we're going too far.
Gary, did you accidentally move beyond annual report to annual reporting package?
No, I didn't accidentally. I deliberately.
I mean the annual reporting package is more than the annual report. That is then the analyst communication.
I meant the cover to cover. They discuss the company in lots of different ways for different audiences. And, if the audit standard setters want to say, as part of the consideration legitimacy of the segments, you should look to other communications, they can do that. Same thing with the regulators. I don't think we should do it.
Gary, is it about the granularity of information, the type of information to be provided, which I think is the next question? Or is it about the identification of segments? Here we are talking about which segments are identified. And the fact that management looks at much more data for each segment is the next question, I think.
Well, I was still on the first question about do you start looking to other communications other than your regular financial communications that you file with the securities regulator?
So I'd go with investor presentations used to explain the results or something to try and link it to those particular presentations, because I'm guessing that that's where it's particularly acute for investors, where that's sort of at the same time there's two different pictures given when they're meant to be getting the management perspective. Why would they turn around and describe it differently at the same time? So I'd expose that. People will tell us whether it's workable or not. I think it'll be important in the basis to explain why we're asking for this disclosure, this expectation that we had of consistency, given that we were going for the management view, that we hope that this provides some discipline, because otherwise people will just come back and start asking questions about scope, etc. So I think it's going to be important to explain what it is that's driving this request.
Actually, it's so simple for these companies to explain, because management commentary is how we look at the business through the eyes of management. And the investor package is how investors like to their information to be packaged. Standard solution for this awful requirement. That's what's going to happen.
Well, actually, Hans, on that point, because someone brought that attention, our attention to that yesterday, that we should be asking not just for people to explain why they're different, which is what you just summarized, but also what the differences are, because that gives the context for the why. And so that was something that we wanted to just raise when we asked the question to you about
sort of a reconciliation, almost. Not necessarily
numerical, no, but an explanation of what the differences are and why they are.
Okay. Mary?
I was just going to say that something that might make this easier to do is if that what we point out is we're looking for inconsistencies in how you identify the segments, not just any differences, because taking one of the earlier examples, if at a certain time I discuss only one of the three segments that I identified, that's not inconsistent with how I identify my segments. The problem that we're looking for is when the segment footnote says I have two operating divisions, products and services, and when other communications are cut all by geography because they say that geography is the primary driver of differences in performance. You know, that's the inconsistency that we're looking for. So I think we should emphasize that it's not any differences, but it's when it's differences in the on the basis of identifying what the segments are. So that it's a more focused thing that we're problem we're focusing on.
So some suggestions for more focus, and I think we also have reasonable consensus that it could be a little bit broader, that it could see to the package as a whole, rather than just the angle statements. Who could support that solution?
Maybe.
Okay. Gary might withdraw his support after his next visit to the FBI.
We're moving on to the second issue. Number of reported line items for segment information. When the board discussed this issue last time, it tentatively decided to provide additional guidance about the type of information that's most useful to investors. The board's ultimate intention was to remind preparers about the importance of providing users of financial statements as relevant information about the entity's activities. During the drafting process, we had some questions about how to clarify this intention that the board expressed last time. We have three questions in total. You can find them together with our recommendations on page 9 of the paper. And I suggest that we address these questions one by one, starting from question 1. So question 1 deals with whether entities may disclose additional segment information within the scope of IFRS 8, and whether this information might include information that's not reviewed or regularly provided to the chief operating decision maker. IFRS 8 has disclosure requirements, namely in paragraphs 23 and 24. And the question is whether entities in theory can disclose more than currently required in IFRS 8.
Yes.
Yes.
Why not? What's the point?
I find that difficult because, man, if you are a group controller and you have to provide your chief operating decision maker with relevant information, which he should judge the performance of his segments, you would assume that this is kind of sufficient information. Now we require, or we say, okay, but if it is for users necessary, you also can add some information. So what could you do? And if you add some information, should you, as a group controller, I would be in a conflict. And if users need this to understand, I would also assume the CODM maybe need also the same information. And for me, it's a little against this idea of the management approach. It is not to say, okay, that is what this guy, and hopefully he is a little bit intelligent to see, okay, that is sufficient information to judge the performance. But then also some users need some more line items. And I think it is a kind of undermining this concept, and therefore usually I would say nothing against to add some information, but who should decide that? That is my problem. When you as a preparer and sitting there and saying, okay, do I have to, do I in a conflict?
Okay.
I can see your point, but I guess the first question, we'll come to this more specific discussion about whether we should include a requirement in the second question, but I think question one is more a general kind of question. If entities want to, can they disclose additional information about their segment, operating segments? It's more kind of higher level question. We didn't, like, we'll come to that concern.
I see it together. Later. Okay, maybe you can. Yes. I see it together.
So, who supports this?
I don't think we could ever stop people disclosing something they felt like disclosing.
Well, then, what's the purpose of making any decision?
I think it does become important on the next question.
Yeah.
Right. So I think I agree with you. I think that's our normal principle, but people might think we need to make it clearer because of the role of the CODM.
And you're absolutely right by saying, like, we usually don't prohibit entities to disclose additional information. It's a very fair observation. But probably I should have explained it, like, a little bit more, or we try to reflect it in the paper. We thought this discussion is relevant within the context of IFRS 8 because it is a disclosure standard. And some people read this very narrowly, you know, because it does list, you know, management approach, you should disclose ABC. And they stop at that. And they, some people, there is perception outside there that that's all you have to do. Like, you know, and you can't go beyond. And therefore, we're having this discussion today about amendment to this specific standard. Probably we wouldn't have had this discussion in any other standard.
Well, I don't know how they're applying paragraph 20 today if they're taking that view.
And this does come back to a perceived limitation that we've got paragraph 20, which is the core principle, which says to give disclosure necessary to understand the business. But then 23 and 24, paragraphs 23 and 24, set out some specific disclosures and the conditions under which those line items would be disclosed, only if they are included in the information provided to the CODM. And so the question really is coming down to, are those two paragraphs, 23 and 24, in any way limiting the application of the principle itself in paragraph 20? And that's the conflict. I don't think it's written in a way that limits it, but I think in practice, a lot of people say, well, I need to comply with 23.24. I don't need necessarily to do anything more than that.
I might argue that's a convenient argument.
Yeah.
Okay, so, Mary,
are we in question B already?
No, not yet. No.
Still, yeah.
Okay.
Still. Still on A. My point.
Well, so shall we just vote on A then?
Yes. A. Okay.
11 in favour.
It's just funny voting on something that is that everybody can do already.
I think what we're voting is, did we think the intention of IFRS 8 was that you could still apply the general principle that if you need to disclose more, you can?
Well, no.
The second question is...
This is B. This is B, right? We are not discussing B yet.
I think B is then whether we need to make it explicit.
That's right.
So to almost Sue's point, what do we think people should do here? Yeah, do we need to make it explicit? Is there a question?
That's yeah, exactly. A is not even necessary to vote. I agree with you. B is the problem. In my view, is a problem. But
we'll come to that.
Yeah.
Question: assuming that we all seem to be broadly in agreement that entities can go beyond the IFRS 8 disclosure requirements. The second question is actually about, do you think we should permit or require entities to provide this additional information?
Well, that's not what you're asking in B.
No.
Permission
in B. The question is not probably worded. The discussion is probably more reflective than...
Permission, but no requirement. The question is, but no requirement.
Ask us as opposed to...
I think the question includes recommendation, and therefore we believe it should be permission. But there is a broader question whether the board members believe it should be a requirement.
I think there are two parts here. I mean, the first one is, do we think we need to explicitly say that people can do this, so specifically allow you to add extra information? And then the second part of the question, which I think is a separate question, is do we want to require them to add extra information if they think it's relevant, which comes back a little bit to Martin's point earlier.
I think this should be the question. Required to observe principles in paragraph 1 and 20. Not really allow or give permission to disclose in addition to 23 and 24. Because the principles are there. So if we are going to say anything to clarify, should be required that despite what is required already in 23 and 24, you are required to follow the principles in paragraph 1 and 20 to provide the users the information needed. Yes. This is my view on this issue.
And that's what the issue comes down to.
Yeah, really. Exactly. Not permit. Permit an additional disclosure to observe a principle that we establish in the standard. I think it's very odd, very odd.
I do think that's quite a big expansion of the scope.
Yeah. So
it's also an implicit interpretation, though.
Yeah.
If we thought that we needed to change IFRS 8 to achieve that, we're implying that that's not what 20 is already saying.
Yeah, exactly.
But it's all about whether you see 23 and 24 as limiting 20 and 1.
Never saw like that.
It suggests if you apply 1 and 20 completely that the CODM part almost becomes irrelevant. It's now about what you think is the important information for the and the CODM is only about which segments you actually present, but the line items are far more about what you think is important than what you've actually given to your CODM.
Is that how we read that?
I'm interpreting what Amara said.
I'm not.
So where is this leading, guys?
So we when we looked at this initially, we were considering should we put to you a recommendation that to specify or to clarify, if you like, to specify that an entity must provide additional information over and above that set out in paragraphs 23 and 24 if that is necessary to meet the objectives in paragraphs 1 and 20. Now, we held back from recommending that because we were concerned that to do so effectively overrides the management approach. Yeah. That the management approach was based on saying, you know, a company should give the information that it itself uses to run the business. Mm. And that if it isn't using particular pieces of information to run the business, then it doesn't get caught by the disclosure requirements in IFRS 8. So that's why we held back from that. We did feel, though, that it was worthwhile to include a specific permission in IFRS 8, though, to say, notwithstanding that, if management themselves think that it would be helpful to give extra information, then of course they can do so. They themselves are not being limited by this. It's just that we're not requiring more of them than that.
Well, to say, of course we shouldn't say it. Then we create precedents again. If we in other standards we are silent, does that mean that they cannot give extra information that is not specifically required by standard?
But I think there's a way we can deal with that in drafting. And it's not just the basis. I think that, first of all, if the only thing the staff was bringing us from the PIR was, please let's issue an ED to give permission, I'd say we don't need to do it, that's trivial. Since we've already said for the first question that we looked at about inconsistency and segment identification that we're going to be putting out an ED, I can see that if some of the feedback we got from the PIR is that people believe they are constrained, I'm surprised by that, but if they believe they are constrained, then I could see that we could offer a comment that IFRS 8 does not, establishes a minimum, does not create any kind of maximum. But that's, I agree with Hans about the risk of if we don't give permission, it's forbidden. You know, that's a nonsense way to go about it. So it's maybe some kind of, you know, confirmation or comment. Maybe it's in the basis, maybe it's elsewhere, but I think it should be expressed as, to be clear, I4S does not, I4S 8 establishes a minimum, it's not a maximum. Now, I think the staff, if you want to ask us, and you just described why you didn't have a question about requiring it, but I think we need to have an on-point discussion about whether the basic principle requires you to produce additional information. If you believe that what is disclosed to the chief operating decision maker does not satisfy the principle, the core principle, much as I would like to take that route, I believe it is inconsistent with the management approach. And we cited the management approach again and again, you know, when we think about interim reporting sometimes, you know, when we look at why we went this route, it's very clear from the drafting of 23 and 24 that it's if this information is reported to the chief operating decision maker. And I think that's different from a circumstance which is in virtually every other standard, in which we say, here's the principle and here's a list of specific requirements that generally you'd be expected to do. And that's when I think we can rely on that overarching kind of general principle of course you need to do more if there's something. But here in I4S 8 we say it's all about seeing through the eyes of management, and therefore the test is whether the chief operating decision maker gets it. If we want to talk about whether that's the right principle, that's a much bigger issue. But I think we should be explicit that that's what we're discussing rather than nibble away at the edges. So in response to your specific question too, do we agree to include explicit permission? No, not as permission, but I think we could make the observation to confirm for certainty that it's a minimum, not a maximum. But I do not support the additional question that's just kind of surfaced about whether we believe it's required to include additional line items if they're not reported to the chief operating decision maker, because I think the relationship between the general principle and the specific requirements is different in I4S 8 than it is in other standards.
I could accept B also. It's because, you know, it is totally in line with the understanding what Michael just explained. It is different from IX1. You know, based on IX1, you are the entities, the management liable to provide more information if it is relevant. Here is slightly different. I think, Mary, you confirm it is different, but then why you will interpret B as a shall? And then I didn't see that. You feel, eight is different from IS1, am I right?
Yeah.
And therefore, use permission rather than shall. It's okay or not? I think it's okay to permit you to do so. Not shall.
Right. Okay. You know, I was disagreeing with shall.
But here, not use shall.
Yeah.
Right. So but I would, that's because my discussion that you've labeled shall was about the additional question that Nadia and Michael raised that's not in the paper but seems connected with B. I don't object. The part of B I object to is characterizing it as giving permission, because that's Hans's training point about, do we send a general message that if we don't give permission, anything is prohibited, which is why we should just communicate it in a slightly different way. But I think we can do B. I'm not opposed to B. But it's the broader question of should we make a statement that you are required, you shall.
Okay, no, I don't think anybody wants that.
Well,
when we have decided, we should not have said it.
What? You were voting? Were you voting?
Well, no. I was disagreeing.
Okay.
So I would like that objective in paragraph 20 to be complied with properly, and for the necessary information to be given to enable users to understand. But I recognize there's an inherent conflict and inconsistency, because when we go on to paragraph 21, we're saying to give effect to the principle, effectively we're saying you shall presume the principle has been satisfied by doing this. That's really what it's saying, but it's not quite saying it. So I accept that as written it's a management approach, and that if we disclose the information reported to the CODM, then you're presumed to satisfy the principle.
Mm.
Clearly we're not going to stop any company providing any more. What I'd like to do is what somebody said earlier, I think Daryl, management approach for determining the segments, and they'd be much more specific about a more comprehensive data set for those segments and not limiting it to whatever package goes to the CODM. But that's a big change to the standard.
Yes.
So whilst I'd love to see that, I recognise I'm not going to get that.
Okay, that's very helpful. So where are we getting? I'm getting completely confused.
I think in general, I mean, the board should obviously speak for itself, but I think in general, many of the board members are agreeing with what we are proposing in both A and B.
Yeah, soft B.
Yes,
yeah.
But the Hans's point about B, I think, is important, that if we start putting this in the standard, what do we do in terms of implications for others? Isn't this just really education?
I think the problem is that contradiction that you spoke about a minute ago with the CODM or the management view, and now we're saying, but notwithstanding that, you can add extra lines if you want to. And I think it's that notwithstanding the initial restriction.
That's the really critical thing.
Okay.
I think that all that should be the basis for conclusions, where we should say, of course, this is not intended to limit the information that management wants to provide if they find it necessary.
Okay. And then C?
It's a separate kind of discussion. It's not related to or requirements. So basically, the question is whether the board should provide any additional guidance in FRSA on the type of segment information that would be helpful to meet the core principle in paragraph 20. Just describe, you know, as a narrative, and we recommend in the paper that the board shouldn't provide any such additional guidance. Because we just believe it's a matter of judgment, basically. That's what it comes to. And because there's such a variety of information out there.
Do we agree?
Just a moment, let me make a question. So what kind of information do you have in your mind in this guidance?
We're not going to do it. Originally, when we first thought this through, we had recommended a different approach to this issue, which was to add in additional explanation about what information would be useful.
Yeah.
And when we drafted up the pre-ballot, we were concerned that some of the feedback we got was, well, what we were putting in was just a different articulation of what was already there. So hence we went back to the drawing board and thought, well, actually, what is it this issue all about? And hence we've made this recommendation today, which you've just agreed with, and proposes that we do that instead of what we had agreed the last time.
Okay.
I don't think we're going to be able to say what's in paragraph 37 based on the decisions, right? We can't give assurance that there's going to be better information provided to users on the basis of saying we don't mind if you provide extra information.
You're overselling the changes.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yes. Okay. I think we
need to go out with that message.
We'll intend.
More modesty, please. Yes.
Yes.
Okay. Thank you. All right. Then thank you very much, and we go to.